You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, everybody. We're back with another Bald Move Pulp podcast. This is the second in our planned four-part series. Well, probably fifth with a wrap-up of us going through two episodes at a time, considering Netflix's new mind-bending What the Hell is Going On 1899. By the way, Jim, I still don't know what the hell is going on four episodes in.
Okay, well, don't ask me because I don't know what the hell is going on either.
And it feels like the paths are getting more and more windy. Rather than like we're halfway through, but that makes sense. Halfway through a puzzle box, everything should be the most exploded. In fact, I could go with another two episodes of explosion before they have to start to bring things back to the end of the season. But I like the end of episode three.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's got this, Connect Four board that he's playing with.
The slide puzzle. The triangles on it.
Mm-hmm. And like the circuit board that the captain just said that this is one of the new changes they made when they dry docked the ships for 3 months. And it's like it's making the circ this link that they've got with the boilers. And I'm like, oh, man, the Prometheus is going to turn on and do something wild. And then they go to the outside view of the two ships, and I'm looking at the dark Prometheus. I'm waiting for the lights to turn on. And then the fog just sucks into the Kerberos, and the fucker disappears. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's no explanation for that in 1899 or 1978 technology. That's just fucking weird, man.
Or 2022 technology. Yeah. No, it's crazy. I really love the aesthetic of this show and Dark. Like Dark had a lot of this too, where like if they're doing time travel stuff, if they're doing teleporting stuff, whatever, their technology looks not steampunk. It's like mechanized in a way that is really cool.
It's more of like Dr. Frankenstein technology, like big physical switches and chunky. You can hear like solenoids engaging and electricity arcing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's got its own thing that it's doing, and I find it really cool, just aesthetically. Yeah.
Gothic steampunk, maybe? I don't know.
And it's totally magical, right? It's not even like, even if this stuff was just like sliding open doors and moving things around and like stuff that we could conceive of technology doing, it would still feel kind of magical because none of this stuff feels like it should work, right? What does a slide puzzle have in it that's like communicating with this machine on the wall that is built into the boat? Like none of it makes logical, technological sense, but it's very cool in the context of this world.
You got full blown resurrection.
You do? Mm-hmm.
Like that's a very interesting tie in to the Prometheus theme that someone is eternally regenerating.
Yeah, the end of season or episode four, rather. The boy just returns.
Yeah, there's a couple things I'm feeling stronger about. Like I think. What do you think? What do you think about what I'm thinking here? I think the boy equals Daniel.
Yeah, I've been low key thinking that for episode two, but three and four, I think really kind of they definitely don't like say it. It's not certain, but there's a lot of implication.
Yeah, the one that because I was kind of low key thinking that because I think there's a physical resemblance and they did that so well in Dark where they just cast these people so perfectly. I feel like there is that going on. And then when Mara, who sees, you know, she's kind of already seen this kid as her adoptive son, you know, the son that she never had. And she's forming this bond really quick with him and the mob. You know, because we got just God, these are some crazy episodes. The mob formed has demanded the kid's blood. It's very Stephen King's The Mist. You know, you got these religious fanatics that have taken over. I know.
The fucking worst. I get so angry, irrationally angry at these fictional characters.
Yeah, no. Imagine being subjected to this kind of treatment. And they throw this kid overboard because he's Satan. Mm-hmm. And You know, they're all in the stateroom, the dining room, and Daniel sidles up to Mara, who's she's trying to protect her this whole, you know, it's like, hey, things about to go bad, lock yourself in the room. He comforts her and they exchange some meaningful glances where, like, I thought, you know, this is all nonverbal, but with his eyes and expression, he's like, yo, I'm the Daniel is the little boy is me. And then I thought she had like a look of awareness, like she got all of that. And then the kid golden flashed himself into the cabinet. But the thing is, like, I'm pretty sure that's what's happening, but I don't know what the fuck it means.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we're going time loops again. I didn't think they would actually do time travel because that was such a backbone of their other thing. But like, I guess why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like these two episodes got me a little like messed up, and I couldn't like quite follow the dynamics of the mob forming. And I think it's there. It's all there. It's just I wasn't quite picking up what it was putting down because they're started off with like one faction that wanted to turn the ship around. Right. And the mutineers, the crew. Mm-hmm. And they take over and they lock the captain in a thing. But then another faction forms, which wants to kill the boy. But then by the end of it, the factions are teamed up and there's a new faction, which is like all the stragglers who weren't on board for either of those philosophies. It started to get a little messy for me, but in a good way. Like, I don't think it was super confusing.
The Friends is like the muscle of the boat. He's the guy whose face is continually beat up, freshly beat up, no matter what happens. That's got to be something we're supposed to notice, right? It seems like he had this growing panic reaction where he just had to bust out and do something. And his something was, we got a whole bunch of angry people because this little girl died and they want justice for us. I know, I'll go to the ship's armory and I'll just arm everybody. And with that power, we will depose the captain. But as the first officer, what is his name? Sebastian points out, you fool, you've gone and given everyone, all these panicky, scared people a gun. And the only thing
from tens of different cultures and countries, we don't know anything about these people. Yeah.
Right, we can't speak their language there, and they immediately start forming their own kind of posses and just go and doing whatever the hell they want. I feel like it's going to be Gangs of New York, Titanic edition.
Yeah, that's what I mean when I say it got real messy. Just, yeah, stuff gets real complicated real fast.
Yeah, gonna have the dead rabbits going against the butcher's sons and the nine penny thieves. I don't know. It's a wild situation. Especially now that like the kid pretty much proves that he is the devil. Like there has some witchcraft power.
There's no way of getting rid of him. I love that. Like you can throw him overboard. You could probably like cut off his head. He's coming back, right? You're stuck with whatever this curse or whatever it is.
Do you still think Daniel is killing these people? Because I thought it's because you mentioned that they had this kind of snicker snack sound where it sounds like someone's being stabbed.
Or a knife being opened or pulled out or something at the
And when we see maybe it's just him slide that it could be the sound of him sliding those things around.
Oh shit! I hadn't thought of that. But you're right. When they inspect the bodies, there is not a scratch on them. Like
I thought you would think
they died of old age, natural causes.
I thought her neck would be broken, her throat would be slashed, and what's more, bodies keep piling up. And I'm trying, God, I wish I had time to watch this a second time. I'm trying to think if there was ever bodies discovered where Daniel was accounted for in the whereabouts. Or is he running around and slide puzzling these people all to death? But there's now a mound of bodies to deal with. And you start thinking, like, this had to be how the Prometheus went down, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. And probably all the chaos you see there is power struggles, just like we're seeing on... you know, people afraid and lashing out and trying to protect themselves and destroying the ship in the process.
It makes me wonder how they got to the end state of the little boy being locked in the closet. And he was a sole survivor. Because if Daniel was there, why would he be locked in the box? Because he had to be found.
Well, they probably tried to kill him and he came back there, right? And so they were like, well, if he's just going to keep coming back, let's lock him in there. If that's where
how they all die.
I don't know.
because Daniel's still out there killing people. And then once he's locked in a bus, so Daniel, it pleased Daniel because Daniel was there on the boat. He had to be because he just popped out of the ocean.
And that's how it happened. Yeah.
It had to please Daniel to leave his child accomplice in the box.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to figure out all of this stuff. We're going to come up with like, oh, this makes perfect sense based on what we've seen in episodes 3 and 4. And then we'll watch 5 and none of it will make any sense anymore. So I feel like it's kind of a fool's errand to say, oh, yeah, this dot connects to that one and that one.
Well, one thing they
we don't even know where the dots are.
One thing they pointed out in this episode is the second part of Martin reveal that we forgot to point out in the first episode that we covered, is that the captain, when he was over on the Prometheus, found the ribbon of his dead daughter.
Yes.
We see in a flashback, he finds that. That's one thing that I can't envision how that could have happened, because my impression is these people died in so far in the past that there's like before the ships were acquired. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of a way that that ribbon could have possibly, since presumably that ribbon was burnt up. How that ribbon could have possibly gotten on that ship.
He says his family died 2 years ago and this ship has been lost at sea for 4 months on what is apparently a 7-day voyage. So, yeah, there's no possible way that they were on that ship. At least not possible in our real world as we understand it. And there's a lot of stuff like that too, right? Like I was kind of disappointed that all we get of the logbook is a manifest. Even though it has something interesting in there, which is that Mara was supposedly on that ship as well. She's listed on the manifest. I think it's interesting, but my God, I wanted to hear the captain's words on what went down over there.
Yeah.
That's some of the creepiest shit in these like derelict ship kind of shows, where they go over and they get the real-time accounting of how it all went down, especially when you know that you're now in the same situation. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
Well, I wondered that too, because it looked like the logbook maybe was intact and he just took the one page. Now, did you notice that the captain on that manifest was listed as E. Larson?
No, who's that?
Ike Larson is a captain of the Kerberos. So, like, whatever finger he's pointing at Mara?
Wait, the Prometheus, right? Because I know he's the captain of the Kerberos.
On the manifest, it shows him as Captain the Prometheus. Yeah, that same manifest page has him being the captain. So, like, why did he miss that himself?
How would he miss that? If your name showed up on a list, even if it was just your first initial and your last name, I would notice. My God.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I verified that. So we got potentially Ike Larson. Maybe it's Eric Larson. We got Ike Larson, but Captain. He doesn't notice this or doesn't see fit to bring Mara onto. It's more of an accusation. You've been lying instead of we've all don't know what's going on.
Right.
The other thing I thought it's interesting is that it seems like every one of the main characters has gotten a letter.
Yes,
because we see that Lucien got one, and also Virginia Wilson.
Yeah,
had one addressed to Virginia as well. What the hell is going on with that?
I don't know. Mara is conspicuously the one that doesn't have the letter addressed to her, right? Right. Which is probably right, because she probably wasn't supposed to be on this ship. I don't know.
But who was it? So is she not even this guy's brother? Did she intercept a message from two brothers? Or from a brother and another sister?
Oh.
Because if it wasn't addressed to her, who is it supposed to be addressed to?
It's addressed to Henry, but I assume Henry sent it to her. He got the letter, but why was he getting a letter?
Oh, that's what I meant. Who? Well, I guess we don't know who addressed any of these, and they're all in the same hand. They're all in the same,
same letterhead, same envelopes, whatever. So you think everyone on the Prometheus also got a letter? And that's how like Henry got his letter, and she's, because at the beginning of the show she was like, "Oh, what'd you do? What was happening on those ships? And what, you killed my brother and all that stuff." Was he on that ship, maybe?
And it's, he got possible, a letter
and then sent it to, like, her. But how would he send it to her once he's on the ship?
But now that you can teleport matter across time and space, I don't know. Because, like, I want to try to find a way that the Kerberos is literally the Prometheus. But I don't think that's what they're wanting. Because having these three ocean liners, that was a pretty common practice back in the day. You know, you had the Titanic, mm-hmm, and the Britannia and the Olympic. You know, you had these, like, mm-hmm, three, because, like, you wanted to have a ship leaving every week. You needed three ships across the Atlantic to be able to do that. So, like, I think they'd add three separate ships. But, yeah, I don't know. There's so many odd details about the Prometheus. Its overall condition, the fact that it looks like it was sank, and it's been, you know, the fact that the manifest has people that are on the Kerberos on it, like, that just doesn't make any sense.
And I'm super curious about this three ship thing, right? It's triangle motif again, right? Three points on the triangle,
three ships. They spent 3 months at dry dock,
and the third ship is nowhere to be found. We haven't seen it. It makes me wonder, right? We didn't even know of its existence until this episode. So it makes me wonder if these shafts, because we see the shafts are real. It's not some figment of the captain's imagination. He's not hallucinating.
Multiple people have seen it.
Mara goes in them. Right. The boy goes in them. There's one under her bed, too.
Well, wait. Do we know that for sure? Or we're surmising that based on him crawling under there and we're hearing him opening in a hatch? Because
he knocks on the hatch and Mara opens it up and sees that there's one under her bed and lets him out. So,
right.
I'm wondering if these shafts aren't connected to each other somehow, because when he goes down in there, like, he comes out and he talks to Daniel, and Daniel's like, "Did you find it?" Mm. So clearly, like, these shafts lead to another place.
It's a little
frustrating.
They don't
just dead end.
It's a little frustrating that we don't know any more about those shafts than we did two episodes ago. Like, we've had multiple characters go down there, and they are allergic to showing us, like, what the fuck is going on down there? And no one comments on it when they come down and come back up.
I feel like there's some kind of teleportation that's happening at the bottom of those that will send you to one of the other shafts in another ship. That's my guess. And that the third ship is, like, I don't know if it's in dry dock, wherever, like, so they might use it to teleport in and out of this Bermuda Triangle situation they've got going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially when you combine it with, like, teleporting whole ships.
Yeah. Something, well, we also got confirmation that this, according to the captain, who might be crazy, these ships originally did not have any shafts, any of these obsidian shafts, didn't have this complicated circuit breaker that's they said was steam engine sensors. Mm-hmm. These are things all been added. So this is clearly shaping up to be something of a test, you know, like his surmisal of, we're running this non-profitable thing with an under booked ship, and we're going this weird mysterious route just as bait for something. That's sounding like it's a solid theory. The other thing I think I'm surmising is Sebastian, the first officer, is in on it, because only he knows about that triangle panel, right? Like, the captain doesn't know about that ticker tape that had the different triangles, and he goes to that panel and he enters that precise sequence and it does something.
Oh, right, that is him.
So he is an observer of the experiment, a control for the experiment, because he's also very passive. Like, he wasn't, he didn't outright support the captain, but he didn't defy him. And now that there's been the mutiny, he goes and kind of, you know, shame, know your name to He's described in the wiki as the captain's right hand man, Franz, the one with the beat up face. I don't know what is like if he's the master at arms or he's like what position he's the second in command or what. But I don't know what's going on with the Sebastian guy.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right. He is in on it somehow.
I wonder if those were coordinates to like where to transfer the ship. But we know where the ship was transferred. The ship was transferred at the exact place that they first deviated from the course, as if they never found the Prometheus and was going on. So it's like they are being forced to go back on the original path that they were supposed to go on.
Which raises the question, were they teleported only in space or also in time? And I can't help but think like the visual motifs of these triangles. I saw like part of this on the wall in Mara's cabin where the boy's sitting next to it. If you take one of those, you turn it upside down and you put those stacked on their points, it's an hourglass, right? It's very evocative of like a timey-wimey thing, which we know Dark had in spades. Sure. This may or may not. So I still am keeping the time travel stuff open. Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff that says simulation.
Right.
But it could be something even weirder, right? Like, it could be something that's just wholly made up for this show.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the triangles that the guy's inputting are, you know, we talk about the alchemaic symbols. He's putting in various symbols for water and fire, water and fire. The company's symbol is Earth, and the inverted symbol of that would be air. So like if you had different combinations of like Earth on top of fire, it would look literally like a filled hourglass.
Yeah.
That just been turned over. And if you had, what would it be? It would be water on top of air. You would have a hourglass that's completely emptied into its bottom. Maybe there's something to that.
I feel like there might be. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff I still have tons of questions about. As you said, it exploded it. And just like technology wise, I have so many questions, but then you get to the characters and stuff.
Can we talk about the, because it seems like what's going to happen is every episode we're going to open up on a new title character. They're going to have some kind of flashback trauma sequence. They're going to be Mara. The voice on the captions is credited as Mara is going to tell them to wake up, and they're going to wake up with triangle pupils. Did you notice the triangle pupils this time?
Ah, shit. No, I didn't look for them. I will not.
I couldn't tell on Ling because her eyes are just fucking jet black as far as I can tell.
Gotcha.
Who is it? More? Who's the
Jerome?
Jerome has got fairly dark eyes, but I actually was able to make out the triangle pupil. Nice. Let's talk about Ling. How did she get aboard the Prometheus? Not the Prometheus, I'm sorry. Well, maybe the Prometheus. How did she get aboard the Kerberos for sure?
It's my opinion that Mrs. Wilson was... She's a madam, we find out, over in America. And she is... she was off in the more exotic parts of the world, searching for girls to talent. Work for her. Talent. Yep.
Sex
doing talent search.
Yep.
And she had decided she was going to bring... Yingli's sister or Lingyi's sister over
there. Is it her sister?
I think
so.
Or
is it just a girl in the village?
I think it's her sister. I don't know.
I don't know where you got sister because I did not get that impression, but you might be right.
I don't know. I mean, would you just want to take the spot? I guess my question is, why is Yingli keen on leaving?
She wanted her freedom.
It looks like she has a shitty life, but this is not freedom.
But why is it shitty? Because she said the life I had is every time men came by, I had to hide in this box.
Uh-huh.
Which we see happen at least once, and somehow she gets thrown into the water. I don't know if that's a fear she has or if that's something that literally happened.
I think it's because that's where the body of the girl was in whatever past version of this event happened. And they threw it overboard to hide the body, right?
Oh, I see. So she is thinking about like what it would be like to be in that girl's position.
Maybe.
Although I guess she's already poisoned and dead. But
or
yeah,
she could,
no.
You know, in some weird scenario, be in that position in some simulation. Yeah. Who knows? But
yeah,
I think that's what was going on there.
But Mrs. Wilson has gone to recruit somebody. Then she's taking this person out of a rural Chinese village, mm-hmm. and she's going to teach him to be a geisha girl so she can get top dollar in the New York market.
Crazy. You're not going to Japan to harvest your geisha girls. You're going to
I'm guessing
China?
A geisha girl would cost a lot of money and maybe not be willing to go to New York and be a prostitute, where if you know, the idea that you've got like a geisha in captivity is, you know, that exotic thing that's getting the rich dudes boners going.
Being made even more exotic by the fact that she's never been with anybody. She's never
well,
had
yeah,
sex.
That's whole like Mrs. Wilson's eyes glittering at that.
Oh God,
and,
right?
You know, but she's that's the thing is like we don't know what anyone's running from yet. We're getting the one we have the most clear picture of is Jerome, because somehow I think he's going to be labeled as a deserter and he's kind of going to like be an outcast in French society. So he's trying to maybe and also get revenge over what's the guy's name? Is it Etienne?
Lucien.
Because that's the other thing. Okay, let's stick a one trauma as a flashback at a time.
Yeah.
We found out about Ling that whatever her mom is a prostitute. And that's how she provided for her daughter. And she wanted a better life for her. Somehow that better life involved hiding in a wooden box from men from time to time. Maybe that's what that's where she went and her mom did her dirty business.
I think so. Yeah. Because did they live on the boat? Is this a houseboat situation?
Is it a working boat?
Yeah, it might be both. It might be both. I don't know. And that's why she was hiding in the box.
But she craved freedom. So she saw that her mom, to rob her Johns, would every once in a while whip up some kind of concoction that would knock the guys out, presumably so she could rob them or otherwise take advantage of it. Ling saw that and she's like, oh, Mei Mei is going to be taken to New York by this one woman. And because she's naive and doesn't understand everything, she decides to drug her. But she probably puts a full dose, giant Englishman dose of poison into a little 5 foot nothing Mei Mei body and it kills her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's forced to relive the situation where like she, from her perspective, sees Mei Mei, who's all excited about this opportunity. And I don't know.
I feel so bad because then we go back to the boat, right? And all this is influencing the decisions they're making there. And Mrs. Wilson is getting very, I don't know, more excited about the prospect she has here as soon as she gets back to New York.
But she also is enraged that she's been lied to because she thought that she was getting a professional working girl who is well seasoned and she's got the girl who can't even get naked in front of another lady without, you know, it being traumatic to her.
Yeah, it turns out she's a virgin. There's a inspection scene, let's call it, where Miss Wilson is inspecting her, and nothing is good about this scene except for the affect that Miss Wilson has when she takes off her ring. I love the
oh,
little
God,
wiggle.
It's
like so perfect.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, it's a scene, all right.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
I feel so bad for her mom, like trying to tell this teenage daughter that the choices you're about to make in your life are going to affect. They're going to stay with you. Like it won't ruin you as a person, but they will stay with you, right? It's like in your own mind, in your head, these are choices you can't take back. And just her daughter not understanding that, I felt so bad for her.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, like I said, it's not that sex work ruins anyone necessarily, but
right.
It's like what society feels about it, how you feel about it, and also just like how good is the sex work in the country, like what kind of protections there are. Like I don't think it's still to this day, as libertine as we're getting in 21st century Western world, it's still a lot of stigma doing any kind of sex work. Like even if you're just doing like, you know, lewd camming, there's a lot of people that feel differently about that, and you imagine in 1899 that's going to go a bunch further.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that. It's that she's making these decisions thinking she has no other choices, thinking that, like, clearly these are traumatizing things to her. And they're not things that, like, are a socially acceptable or even acceptable by Ling Yi's standards. It's a decision she's making out of desperation that is going to stick with her for the rest of her life. I just felt so bad because her mom's been through it, right? And she knows.
Oh, yeah.
But trying to tell a 16-year-old or whatever she is, that is, like, I don't know, pissing into the wind.
Who's got, like, her pride's now bound up into it, you know? Like, because she's kind of, there's a lot of defiance in, like, the mother and daughter conversation there. In terms of unintentionally hilarious, awkward sexual experiences, which do you rank higher? Miss Wilson sliding off her ring finger to do the inspection, or the loud clanging circle jerk between first class and steerage?
I was just thinking, I hope there's nobody in earshot, because this sounds... This is a noise you have to come investigate if you hear it.
Dude, yeah, like you, and you would hear from anywhere approximately from 300, because it's just like, it's clang, 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 clang goes the trolley, man. It was hilarious.
The loudest hand job in history, yeah.
Was it a mutual thing, or was the Dutch kid jerking off the Spanish dandy, or
tip
was
to tip? Maybe it was Spanish tip to tip efficiency. Yeah,
I was wondering.
I don't know.
Yeah. What is the deal with Angel? Is he just like a sex addict? Can he just not get enough?
Yeah, it seems like he's a heathen who does not consider the consequences of any of his actions before he's just off doing something on a whim.
Seems like him and Ramiro might be done, because Ramiro's finally seen him for, like, the fundamentally unserious person, or, like, bro, I don't know exactly what his damage is, but he's not ready to settle down. And I feel like Ramiro was under the impression this is a little bit more serious of a thing than it is. But I don't know. I mean, Angel took a beating over it, as I think. So it's not, like, unserious. It's just... like he said, he goes like, hey, look, I am the way I am. You are the way you are. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that can be changed either way, which I think was supposed to be some, like, tough love. But, like, Ramiro's like, oh, OK, well, if that's the case, then I guess I'm going to take my unchangeable ass to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the right response. I like it.
We also found out some, here's some, I don't know the if you want to talk specific things, we could, well, maybe we stay on, Ling for a bit longer. What did you make of the fog invading her personal space?
Oh, I don't know.
Cause the fog seemed like it was intrinsic to the transportation process, cause, like, it all got sucked into the Kerberos before it, like, flashed wherever it flashed to. But it also, you know, behaved like a fog until it started coming into the, I don't know, airlock, the sea lock or whatever. And it surrounded her and forcibly made her relive another traumatic memory.
No, it feels like it's being controlled somehow, because the crew of the boat says one second it wasn't here, the next second we were surrounded in fog.
Right.
So it's like a Truman Show thing where they can turn the rain on. Right.
Right.
That's the impression I got. And yeah, but what is the connection to, like, the memories and the fog? If you want to go into, like, simulation type stuff, you could say that it's representative of, like, getting to the edges of the simulation, maybe.
But these guys are all also being experimented on
consciousness of the real world. I don't know.
Some kind of drug. Like, I could see fog washing over your body as a visualization of a drug washing through your body. And they're being psycho actively manipulated.
Yeah. Just waking up from that drug induced unconsciousness.
Right.
Anyway, and we see injections of all kinds, right? Even in the intro, there's a needle going into a boy's.
And Lucien is downing glass vials of who knows what that's supposed to be an anti
potassium bromide. Yeah.
Oh, is it actually labeled?
That's what he says. Yeah, it's potassium bromide.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we have to take his word for it. But is that an anti epileptic? Because that's what I think he's taking it for.
Mm-hmm. And it also means he can't get it up when he's taking it. So
and he also continues to hate his fiance. And I'm not sure why they got married, and he prefers to rent a prostitute to just hang out with, just to get him out of their quarters for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he talks about, and this is the second time somebody has talked about life being painful, life hurting. He talks about it like, you know, he's kind of stuck in a catch 22, right? He wants to experience pleasures of life, and one of those pleasures is sex, but he can't because he's afflicted with seizures, and the thing he takes to keep himself from being racked by seizures is a drug that makes him unable to experience the pleasure of sex. So,
well, and also it's killing him. It sounds like he thinks himself he only has days, weeks, perhaps months left to live for some reason.
Is that because of his illness, the seizures, or is that because of the stuff he's taking to maintain some kind of reasonable life?
And let's I don't know. And okay. Let's also pivot to talking to the relation to him and Jerome. Because apparently they were French legionnaires, foreign legionnaires, fighting in some godforsaken dune place of the world, some dry desert. And it feels like they've been abandoned. Like they're the lone survivors of some last stand, and everyone's kind of forgotten. They haven't been resupplied. They're starting to starve. And Lucien wants to start looting the dead and do a Dick Whitman / Don Draper. Like, I'm going to trade up. I'm going to take this lieutenant and I'm going to make his identity my own. And I'm going to go back to France as a hero instead of either a deserter or staying here until we die because everyone's forgotten about us. Is that your read of the situation, too?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Is there any way that he caught some kind of disease while he was a foreign legion? Because wasn't there all kinds of legionnaire diseases and stuff? Because this is the day before vaccine and you're taking people whose biome is in one part of the world and you're taking the other, like, I heard that people just would drop dead all the time when you take them, like, especially from Europe to like South America and stuff like that. But could he have gotten something, some kind of parasite or something in wherever the hell they're at?
Sure. The thing that really struck me about these scenes is they're repeating. It happens twice. So the first time we see this scene, it's kind of the aftermath of the scene. Or the second half of the scene, which is Lucien's already looting the body. Jerome's already out of the cage. And all that is happening like you described it. The second time we see it, it starts at a previous point where Lucien is kind of standing there and Jerome's back in the cage. Clearly he gets out at some point, but there's a weird thing that happens at the beginning of this scene the second time around, where Jerome comes to, I think after being concussed. It feels like everybody gets Lucien, hit with something, and then
Lucien bats him in the face with a rifle butt.
Right. And then they come to in these trauma memories.
Pistol butt. He pistol whips him. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting. Like, there's a connection between being knocked out and being in this world. But when he comes to in the cage, he looks
shot
at Lucien.
He gets shot, and that triggers the second flashback. Right. Because he's got a real strong sense of right and wrong in both of these realities. Like, he's saying, like, we can't loot these corpses. It's not right. And he's the one on the ship saying what's happening right now, being these people giving unjust power, is wrong. And that causes him to, like, take a stand against, you know, for the captain and for the boy again. And he gets shot for it.
Yeah.
It doesn't kill him. It just triggers a death flashback.
Yeah, and he'll wake up out of that later. But at the beginning of that, Jerome is in the cage and Lucien is standing outside, but Lucien is standing completely still, like frozen simulation kind of still for a good couple of 3 seconds. I don't know what that means, but I definitely noticed it. Like, you're talking about some of the glitches that are maybe happening.
Yeah.
Throughout this show, which I've started to notice a little bit, but that really struck me.
Yeah. We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the 4 pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
So it's clear that Jerome remembers Lucien. Does Lucien remember Jerome? Because Lucien puts that medal on, or I'm sorry, Jerome puts that medal on Lucien's credenza or desk or whatever to fuck with him. Because he's like, this is the identity you've stolen. I know what's going on. I know what you did last summer, essentially. But why wouldn't Lucien remember Jerome?
He does. There's a scene where Lucien like goes to get his medicine, and he goes in his drawer and he sees the medal, and he like attacks Clements.
Yeah, right.
Because he's like, where the fuck did you get this? So he clearly recognizes that
the medal, but he doesn't where recognize it's from. I've never seen it. Like, didn't he do the thing? It's like, don't you look familiar? But like,
have they interacted? I
thought in like one of the first two episodes that they ran into each other and they mentioned something about like, haven't I seen you before? Maybe it's Jerome and the woman.
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was Jerome and Mrs. Wilson I think it was Mrs. Wilson. Here's the other thing. Let's talk about Mrs. Wilson. She seems to conveniently speak all of the languages aboard this ship.
All of them? Because she definitely speaks...
Not all of them, but more
English
and more
and
as time goes on.
What else does she...
Because she French, remember, okay. She says, oh, I know a little bit of French. And then she's immediately like totally fluent.
Is that because
she's
a
there's
madam?
Something going on with that. Maybe. Like she travels like all over the world.
She goes to Europe and goes to all the poor places and harvests a bunch. She's sex trafficking.
Yeah. But that could be a cover for her being part of whatever experimentation or project is going on here. It just seems a little too convenient that she knows the specific languages of all the people aboard this ship so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, man. There's also like the soundscape where Jerome tries to make a jump for it. There's this weird panting and groaning that's on the soundtrack where he feels like he's a trapped animal or something. I'm not sure exactly what they're going with that.
I don't know.
What did you make of... So last a pair of episodes, we talked about the boiler room boys. that were speculating about a wolf that had gotten out and killed the ship. Mm-hmm. Now this guy's got these giant cloves of garlic around his neck, says he's protecting against, and he's like, well, doesn't that do for vampires? Like, oh, there's this, they work the belt the same. And then they had this interesting conversation about, like, well, how do you believe in werewolves? You've never seen them. It's like, well, I've never seen Russia, but I believe it exists. And well, do you have any ideas, like, of where all that's going? Because that's just baiting supernatural shit.
Totally. And rightfully so, when we see people teleporting and shit. So I don't know, the wolf imagery is strong. Wolves and sheep. I assume, you know, based on Dark, that we're gonna get some, like, mastermind behind the scenes, and he's gonna have a philosophy that goes you know, some fucked up wolves and sheep, and
right,
the sheep deserve to be slaughtered because
the wolf and the sheep is perfect model that nature puts for all. I could see some scarred ass motherfucker saying that.
Right, that's where I assume it's going, but I hope it's a little bit of a twist on that.
It's a lot of tension between, like, Angel and this who's the Dutch kid's name? Crester?
Yeah.
Because this is the second time he's been confronted by his family about his proclivities, and it's the second time one of the female family members has thrown one of the precious items of Angel's at his feet. Like, the first is the sister throwing the cigarette box, and now it's Tove's mom throwing the gold watch at his face. And then Crester gives the follow-up spit in his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Crester's taking a real turn this episode. He is all in on the religious fundamentalist insanity, the irrationality. That part of the show just is really driving me insane.
And then we also have the, you know, Maureen or Mara gets upset because they get the boy and they form a lynch mob. And we thought that the Toe's father, the preacher, was going to be the spiritual community leader, but it seems like it's her mom more than anything. There's a couple interesting things. So, like, when they find out the little girl's been killed and Crester was off getting the loud clangy handy, he comes back and he's overcome by grief. He tries to smash a window and he's like, if we don't open a window, her soul can't escape. Do you think that'll mean anything?
Because
I thought it'd just be a throwaway superstition, but, like, here we are, people resurrecting and caught in time loops and God knows what other kind of metaphysical stuff. I'm like, huh. The fact that he couldn't break a window and the fact that he's saying it's traps her soul there, to me, my ears pricked up about that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, because it's so far we've only seen the connection in the boy and Daniel to that kind of metaphysical stuff. So
they work.
This could
together.
Be a red herring.
The boy and Daniel, who I think are one and the same, separated by some kind of future time loop. Mm-hmm. They work together. They help each other out,
and they're specifically looking for something in the wherever those shafts go, right?
Yeah,
I want to call them hatches just because of Lost, but
right,
I don't know. That's definitely got. It might be an homage
to some guy down there telegraphing lottery numbers. Then we'll know for totally. Sure.
But the stuff with Mara, it doesn't end there. I want to talk about some of the stuff with them going over to the other boat, Prometheus.
Okay.
Yeah, Prometheus. Mm-hmm. Because they're looking for the logbook, and they're trying to also find out where all the crew and passengers went. Right. And the captain finds what I think is the half burnt logbook with the manifest in it. Mm-hmm. And he does not tell her that he found any of this stuff. And to me, it's like, she's kind of really dumb in this moment. I feel like, you know, she's confused, but also she's really not asking all the right questions. Cause, like, Captain is hell bent on getting over here, figuring out what went on,
right,
cracking this case. And he gets over there and they search around for a little bit. And then she thinks he found something. She walks over. Hey, you find anything? He's like, nope, let's go back to the boat. It's time we got to leave now.
Right.
Immediately tells you he found something, right? I mean, the dude that's all hell-bent on figuring it out suddenly wants to go back. Yeah.
And she knows something's wrong. She tries to tell him or tries to get him to talk, say, hey, you haven't said anything since we rode over. But now he doesn't trust her. But the thing is that the thing is it's got his name on it. That's the thing that doesn't make sense to me. It's like, instead of seeing this is really fucking weird and bringing her into it, it's something that like is causing her to trust. And I noticed that there seem to be arbitrary divisions growing amongst everybody. And they imply, I think, with some of the camera work and the musical cues, that the boy is causing it.
Mm-hmm. It's possible
that there is some kind of like rage virus that's being unleashed, and this kid's the patient zero.
Yeah, it's my impression that everything we're seeing happening right now happened on the Prometheus, and that's our destination. This boat is going to look just like the Prometheus by the time we're done with it. And maybe since there's a third boat, and since some of these passengers are on the manifest for the Prometheus, we might end up losing the Kerberos and end up with all the same people on the third boat
back on the at some point. Yeah, there was some pre-season artwork, promotional imagery that shows the Kerberos, and then it's mirrored on the other side. And I wonder if you're onto something, like if we start in episode 5 that we're on Prometheus with all the same. So it's like the first half of the season was the Kerberos trying to find the Prometheus, and then we're going to go through some kind of tunnel. And the next part of the season will be the prequel that was the Prometheus leading up to the Kerberos.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be like some kind of Ouroboros in the middle of the ocean. Ouroboros.
Sure. I don't know. Yeah. And then with the captain getting locked in the brig, the makeshift brig or whatever, I feel like one of the funny things is he just starts ripping at the pipes, like starts smashing a pipe. I would not feel comfortable smashing a bunch of pipes on board a boat.
He's the captain. He knows exactly what that pipe does. I
assume so. Yeah, he probably
he's like Captain Picard. You know, he knows how to disable his own damn ship. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay. So what pipe was that? Does one of the decks not have water now? What?
Didn't they have like sound tubes?
Oh, okay.
Literally to carry because in the old days, I think they just yelled into a tube and like acoustically it would go to another part of the ship. And it's kind of like when you went to the Children's Museum and did that thing. I don't know.
Then why have the Price is Right wheel with the thing on it that you push back and forth to communicate with the engine room, because it's too loud down there?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it has to be. My God, you got
couldn't stick your 16 ear on that
engines that can burn 5 corpses apiece. That's some loud ass crematorium shit going on there.
Sure.
It's funny because when she was saying, I thought it was really funny her saying like, oh, these things are hot enough to melt people or whatever. Let's look for bone fragments. And it's like, it seemed obvious to me. And then later in the episode, you see, it's like, what? This is the ocean, man. You just throw them bodies overboard.
Right, right.
Yeah, why would the hell would you spend time and money trying to cremate him when you've got the world's largest graveyard?
Yeah, I assume there is no mystery if you find it a completely abandoned boat, right? The people went overboard.
Where the people, they're in the water, right? Uh-huh. They're either somewhere else on Earth or they're in the water. There's no other in between.
Yeah.
And the other thing is so the boy's regeneration seems to be tied to this cabinet.
Yes.
Like it's a clone box.
Which is why it was locked, I think.
So it's not an intrinsic ability he has. It's whenever he dies, I guess. If he dies, he just regenerates or reteleports or what, however.
Well, what about this cabinet? What about this pyramid? Is there something connected?
Well, not this cabinet, because they found him in the cabinet of Prometheus, but it's the exact identical cabinet on the sister ship Kerberos.
Uh huh.
So why did he regenerate there and not Prometheus?
That is a damn good question, because now he's spiritually or something linked to this boat.
Yeah.
Wait, so as the Prometheus has teleported out at this point, right? Oh, but so has the Kerberos. The Kerberos is back on their original heading, yeah?
Presumably the Prometheus is where they found it, and the Kerberos is back on its original heading. Not clear if it's back on the right time, like if we literally lost a day.
Right.
I think in the days of what do they call that communication? Telegraph, that you would you wouldn't be long wondering if you lost a day. You could just telegraph like New York or someplace and be like, yo, what day is it? And they would be like, it's Tuesday at 12:45, you idiot. Like, right? It's not like you're, it's not like the age of sail where like, oh God, we can't talk to anybody. You know, who knows what happened?
Yeah.
They should be able to know if they've lost days.
You would think so. But yes, you're right. He comes back in the new boat, the Kerberos, which is strange.
What do you think about him hugging Mara? Is that a genuine human reaction that this little lizard boy is having? Or is he is a put on to get max sympathy from her?
I don't know.
Because this kid
needs more info.
Has the flattest of affects. He doesn't appear afraid ever. He doesn't appear
he doesn't fear the Reaper,
ever.
As it were. I love he that they fire up that song when he comes back. I'm like, yes, that's perfect.
Hell yeah. More cowbell.
What is lost will be found. Is that the phrase, right? So now we start to see that coming into effect a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of things lost, Mara also drops on the fact that she had a miscarriage some time ago, and complications from that makes it though she cannot have a child.
Is that part of the procedure that we see of being done to her with the straps and the injections? And is that where she lost the child?
I assume that was just some kind of psychological procedure, but like there's no, I mean, yeah, if they're doing like electroshock or some kind of chemical therapy, I assume that could cause a miscarriage. Maybe. Yeah.
Chemical
could be.
Sterilization, too.
Could be. And you know what?
Yeah.
When I look at her wrists, it's not just that they seem like they happened yesterday. It's like they're not even healing. I wonder if there's some connection to Franz's face. That he's had physical trauma. No, seriously. Like, his, no, like
I'm laughing, but only because his face.
His wounds are never, they're not, they're just still fresh and like actively bleeding. Just the way her wrists look for all the world like she just busted out. Like she just literally busted out of these straps.
Yeah, I'm trying to determine how much time has passed because they're only on a 7-day voyage.
Right. Right.
And I think we're picking up like right where we left off in subsequent episodes, but
yeah there's not a lot of time.
It might just be that only an hour has passed and he hasn't healed yet. But speaking of marks and strap marks and other things, I noticed on Daniel's hand there is a mark on his ring finger where a ring would be. And it looks like you know how they have you remove all your jewelry and shit when you're working on electric high voltage electric stuff?
Sure. Right.
Because if you touch your ring in the wrong way to the wrong thing, it can jump through your ring and through your body in just a very, very easy way.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
It looks like that to me. Like that has happened to him. Like he had a ring on when some high voltage electricity, like we're seeing in these circuit breaker boxes, jumped through him in that ring. And now he no longer wears it because it's just a bad idea.
Interesting. Interesting. Did you notice that the kid has a little triangle line tattoo on the nape of his neck?
Yeah. So he's clearly connected with the company.
And they said that that's the company logo. I think that's something we had guessed, but they made it explicit. So he's property of the company.
And when we say the company, we're talking like Illuminati type shit, right? It's not just a business.
Yeah, because like it's not even clear to me that this company used to do ocean liner thing. It's just like they wholly acquired it for the express purpose of refitting these ships with this scientific equipment to drive them into this Bermuda. That's not a Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
The Mid-Atlantic Triangle.
Yes.
Oh, do you think this is going to go to? Oh, I wonder if there is like some kind of new triangle that's based on Atlantis, the sunken city of Atlantis. Do you think they're going to go?
Oh, and that's why the Prometheus looks all sunken.
Yeah, because I keep thinking about that whirlpool. I feel like the Prometheus spent time in the bottom of the ocean. Also, that's why I thought it's so funny when the captain said he wants to go over and fix the communication system, the telegraph machine on the Prometheus, because that telegraph room looked fucked. Like, I don't think Alexander Graham Bell could set that thing back to rights.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like it got melted and then submerged in seawater.
Yeah.
So good luck with that, Captain. I don't know if all the pipes in the world can help you out with that one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a hell of a lot more to say. I mean, I just feel like we have just been propounding each other with questions that we don't have the answers to for these last 2 hours of podcasts we've done. Like, yeah, not much to cling to at this point. There's a lot of people are still saying, you know, this is the Lost situation where everyone's dead. This is some type of purgatory. It's some kind of simulation.
Okay. Let me run with that simulation theory because I was trying to connect. I'm trying to understand how these people died. That leaves no marks on them. A girl seemingly dies of natural causes. We know she's healthy up till then. No problems. She has a contact with Daniel and suddenly, boom, she's dead. Is it possible that these are like a simulated body that's left behind when the consciousness of the person leaves the simulation? Yeah,
it could be because they're all those bodies all look very Westworld, like host deactivated, don't they?
Yeah,
it's like all wide open, neutral expression, no physical trauma, just stacked up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how do these people die? It may not be that they're dying. It may be that they're just leaving their bodies. And when you talk about like, oh, her soul can't escape unless we break a window, her soul might have already escaped, you know, soul.
But it also wouldn't surprise me to learn that Mara died on the operating table. Larson died in the house fire. What is it?
Lucien and Jerome were killed in the war.
Yeah, Jerome was killed in the war with Lucien, and who's the other? And Ling got thrown in the ocean accidentally with a box and died.
Mm-hmm.
And they all died trying to do well. No, that doesn't, because like I was like, did they all try to die following their dream? But that doesn't seem to be what they're. That's only really Ling's story. We don't know anybody else enough to. I mean, if you want to say that, Lucien had a dream of taking a dead petty officer, not petty officer, lieutenant's identity and living it up in Paris somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping it's not anything that metaphysical. I just love the way that these showrunners, in Dark specifically, created a world that feels both physically impossible, but also somehow grounded. Like these time tunnels, they don't necessarily like physically connect, but it felt like there was something that connected them that was more than just like a spiritual, you know, connection.
Yeah.
It's like physically they are connected in this world somehow where they couldn't be in our world.
And also, you got something there, too, that if these two ships are connected and all three of these ships spent 3 months in dry dock being refitted, they probably is a connection to a previous to a as yet unknown third ship. I wonder if that's going to be a season two thing, because I guess the other way is like if I had the idea that like we're going to rewind and we're going to be on the Prometheus. But it could be that we embark on the third sister ship.
Yeah.
For the second half of this season.
To go search for, or not even search for, but they then find like the Prometheus and the Kerberos.
But how do you, what do the headlines say with this newly started ocean liner? Second sister ship sunk 4 months after the first.
third time's the charm. Third doomed sister ship leaves dock. Yeah.
Yeah. Third ship's the charm, says Royal Triangle Company.
Only fools aboard. Yeah.
And that company will later found a shirt factory in Brooklyn. And the ship is full of dead shirt stitchers because of a fire. And now you know the rest of the story. It's going to tie into the you're not kidding. There's this big like OSHA, like this is like the grandpappy of worker safety things where they had a sweatshop where they stuffed all these sewing girls in this high rise tower. And it burnt and killed them all. And, you know, they had that it caused a lot of reform of like how many people can stuff in a building. And you got to have fire protection material and all that stuff. Mm. I was just making a joke. I don't think this is going to connect to the okay. Triangle Shirt Factory.
I wouldn't guess so. No.
Of the turn of the century America. But it might. And if I accidentally got it right on the joke, I will take those internet points. Anything else we want to talk about these third and fourth episodes?
I wonder if the thing that Daniel and the boy are looking for is in fact the logbook from the Prometheus. Like, they're conducting experiments and they want to know what happened there.
But they seem like they know everything already and were there at the beginning.
Well, then what are they looking for?
The other half of a triangle? Or the pyramid?
Yeah, we didn't talk. So I briefly had this thought and we didn't talk about it, but this pyramid that the boy is mm-hmm. toting around with him. Mm-hmm. I wondered how the boy came back. Like, is it that he dies and he regenerates in the bar, or is it that he has this device on him in the shape of this pyramid that allows him to bring himself back to there whenever that happens?
It's not in his possession whenever when it happens, it. Though. But it isn't? Doesn't need, Where is I guess it? It needs to be. I think it's in Maureen's quarters, right? Or Mara. I don't want to say Maureen, but it's Mara's quarters.
Yeah, you might be right.
I think we've seen it sitting on her desk. But I don't think he's
see it in his hand
it.
Or anything. No.
Maybe the tattoo channels the power.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Or wait. What is the symbol on his neck? Which of the triangles? Which of the elements?
It's the one. It's the ship logo. It's so that would be Earth.
Earth. Ah, fuck. I was hoping it was
he's
water.
He's a golem.
And because he's a golem. He went in the water. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
could be.
It is it a little I was a little frustrated the captain didn't, well, you know, like when he obviously found something and wasn't sharing it, but then it made sense that he found something that made him skeptical of Mara. So he kept that from her because he was shaken that, like, oh my God, she's on and she's not been honest with me, so I'm gonna stop. But like, why does Mara not tell anybody that, hey, I saw this boy's, he's got the company logo tattooed on his neck.
Uh-huh. And he found a shaft in my quarters.
Yeah, like it's a little frustrating if people aren't just like talking, like, hey, we're this big puzzle thing we're trying to do, I figured out something. No, you can't. I mean, this is just what they do on these shows.
It's a puzzle box.
Did they do that in Dark? I felt like, yes, there was a lot of people telling lies, but it wasn't about like keeping arcane knowledge from you. It's more of like, I don't want you to find out that I fucked your uncle or whatever. Sure. You know, it's more of like human. So like, I don't know. I'm a little disappointed that, but then again, maybe did she find that before or after her and the captain went over to the other ship? Because I guess if it's after and the captain is starting to be cagey with her, maybe she starts being cagey with him.
I think it was after because she comes back from that, right? And the mutiny has happened. The captain gets locked in. She goes to her quarters, discovers Daniel in the shaft.
And Daniel tells her that, like,
sorry,
they have to, yeah, the boy.
I'm just assuming.
The boy, Daniel. And the Daniel comes and says, you got to stay locked in here because there's a mutiny.
Yeah. And then the beetle, we haven't talked about the beetle. Is the beetle a physical device that enables, like, it, like the slide puzzle, like seemingly mystical things to happen with doors and whatnot?
That's the thing. If you got the slide puzzle, like, it's like, yeah, I don't know, because it doesn't seem like it's a technological thing. It seems like it's a real bug.
Uh-huh.
But it also has the ability to open doors.
Uh-huh.
Like, every time it crawls under a door, the doors unlock.
And it seems to know what's going to happen in the future. And maybe I'm reading too much into this.
Wait,
but
why do you think that?
So they're following it down the hall, right?
Uh-huh.
And they're using it as kind of a guide about where to go and when. Like Morpheus telling Neo where to go at the beginning of The Matrix.
Okay.
It pauses at a corner when it knows there are going to be people coming.
Gotcha.
And once those people leave, it continues on and the boy follows.
But isn't that just sneaking around? Like, is it actually like Morpheus stuff where he's like ducked down in this cubicle because they're about to look over in this direction kind of thing? Or is it more
that's an open question.
Because I'm thinking, how would that look different if they're just sneaking around in the ship where the beetle's like approaching corner? I hear someone, wait till it's coast clear. Now let's go.
I mean, how much doubt do you really want to throw on this beetle knowing the future in the show we're watching? Right?
None. I just want to make sure that there's a you know, you've got something that you're going on and
such it was more of a feeling. It was more of a feeling watching it.
Okay.
Like, I think this beetle knows more than it's up to, and it clearly has some abilities that we don't understand yet. So
yeah, it's the master at unlocking locks. So you got that right off the bat.
And throughout the series, I think Daniel, the boy, and maybe Daniel's used the beetle too, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
So that connects them too. But
That's how he got into the wardroom to begin with.
Yeah, people follow the Beatle, right? As if it's the guide through whatever physical or metaphysical space they're in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the thing about Mara being on the manifest, I believe that she was listed under the exact same stateroom that she is currently. Okay, I thought so.
Mm-hmm.
So
10-11.
Not just that she was on the sister ship, but she was also staying in the exact same cabin that she was before. It's fucking crazy. I don't know. I don't know how to make of any of this.
I love it.
What else you got for me?
I think that's it.
All right. This is where we're going to pause for the series for this weekend. We'll be back Monday for a discussion of 5 and 6, where maybe this stuff will start to take a shape. I don't know. That's where our plans are Monday. Tuesday, we'll be talking about episodes 7 and 8. Then Thanksgiving weekend will happen, and we'll probably come back the week after that to do a wrap-up episode. If you would like to send feedback for your hot theories at the end of the season, you thought we missed a clue or something as we're going through and covering the series, please send that in to pulp@baldmove.com, and we'll try to go over all that stuff during the wrap-up podcast. And otherwise, yeah, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/baldmove. If you'd like to support what we're doing, you can check out support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get ad-free access to our feeds, as well as a ton of other bonus content. We do whole other podcasts exclusively for the club, movie reviews, talking about television that we're not covering on mainline releases. It's a great time. Support.baldmove.com. Otherwise, have a great weekend. We'll join up as mystery ship again, embark again on Monday. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.